Close your eyes. Sonia Abacha, above my hand, Gutanatric, in Spain. Of course, the league is blown wide open in England. Milan is happy right now. Another shocker in Italy. That's what we have for you today and many more as we start the show. It's New Sisters of Sports. My name is Aleja Adebowale. I have Uku with me today. I have Olawale with me. I have Oruku Kochi. Very happy Kochi today. I hope he's happy as well. And of course, I have Shei back from the exile. And Uduz is back from the exile as well. Olawale, let's start with you.
Yeah, good day, sporting fans around the world. Welcome to the show. Arteta, one of the best coaches in the world of football right now, he has some interesting decisions in his hands to make in the coming days. Smith Rowe, who so far so good, has had a fantastic season, lost his place to Martinelli a couple of weeks ago when he was injured, and since then he couldn't get back into the team. But due to Martinelli's red card, he's back and he scored a goal again. So let's see how Mikel Arteta will handle this. Can he fit both of them in with Odegaard? We are waiting to see that.
All right, perfect. I'll ask me that question when we get to Arsenal. I'll tell you. Oracle Kochi.
Sports fans, always a pleasure being here. The Winter Olympic ends this weekend. Canada did themselves proud with 26 medals all in all. We're happy. I'm not going to say anything about AC Milan. I'm going to let other people blow my trumpet for me. But it's interesting times in England and Italy. Barcelona seems to be on the upward trend. A lot of exciting things to unravel. Stay tuned.
All right, perfect. Uduz Baba is here with us today. Fortunately, we have to kidnap him though.
Hi, sports family. It's great to be back. The Premiership title on top. It's not over till it's over. I mean, Luis Diaz, what an addition to Liverpool.
All right, perfect. We're going to start off with the All-Star games. It's All-Star weekend. Good thing. KD is not going to be playing. Team LeBron, as usual, have all the goodies. And the Slam Dunk contest was yesterday. It was underwhelming. And I'll go with Olari's quote. Olari said the winner should have returned the trophy because it was so bad that everybody is so undeserving of it. And the 3-pointer contest still did not do any word of good. Kachi, I'm gonna start with you. What happened to Zach LaVine? It made me love the dunk contest. What happened to him?
Nothing happened to Zach. When you've won it a few times, you definitely have to pave the way for newer talents.
Sure.
As we'll say in Nigerian parlance, before they see you finish. Zach was there to do other stuff. He contested in the three-point contest, even though I think he got out in the first round with only 14 made shots. So I think it was just a case of clearing the path for other people to participate in. Unfortunately, we're going to some major people, major stars in the NBA will end their career without ever participating in a dunk contest.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking at you, LeBron James. I don't know why you never did that. But yes, coming back to your point, totally underwhelming. Players taking 2, 3, 4 attempts before they make their shots. No dunk was out of the ordinary, except probably for the very first dunk of the night. And that was the dunk by Anthony, who did that wearing the Timberland boots. Because obviously, you know, there was no bounce. There's no bounce in Timberland, but being a New Yorker, I guess for me, that was the highlight. And imagine if that becomes the highlight of a dunk contest. It tells you how underwhelming it was. But for me, the highlight for me was the performance of the entertainment performance on the night. For music lovers, seeing DJ Khaled with Mary J. Blige, Lil Wayne, Ludacris holding the mic again, I thought it was fun. The actual action on the night, even with the Antetokounmpo brothers participating in a skills contest, and not showing any skill whatsoever.
But who gave the Adetokunbo Brothers the chance to be able to participate in skills contest? That's like a mismatch. It's a mismatch.
It just made for a proper entertainment. Three NBA champions in the family, even though the youngest of them now plays in the G League. It never matters. They all have their rings. Yeah, and, you know, they had their name had a nice ring to it. It was the Rooks versus the Cavs, ultimately the winners, and the Antetokounmpos. So it made for a good excitement, but it was totally underwhelming.
Olali, to the All-Star Game proper, what are we looking forward to? What would be the possible highlights that we should look forward to for the All-Star game proper?
Giannis taking it so serious, of course. Giannis always playing game as. Expect Giannis to take the game serious. Expect a bit of the close contest, especially towards the end of the game. You see a lot of logo, three-point shooting. You see some crazy dunk, some unimaginable passes from the likes of Chris Paul. Guys will just come and freestyle, and that's what the All-Star game is all about. Things that ideally or ordinarily you wouldn't probably want to try in a proper basketball NBA game. Yeah. You see guys trying it out. So it's going to be fun. That's what the All-Star game has always been about. It's just a matter of guys coming together. And so I think it's going to be fun. I will watch it, of course. And I know,
if you don't come back here next week. Kachi, you want to say something?
Since the new format where team captains have to draft started 4 years ago, LeBron, as the pseudo GM, has never lost an All-Star game. I'm hoping that this year's edition will be when that finally happens.
I think it may happen.
Team Durant is well stacked, although they are lacking a lot of size. LeBron, with his first three picks, selected the young center from Cleveland, selected Giannis. So he knows what he was doing.
Kachi, apart from that, I think for the fact that Kevin Durant will not be available. James Durant. Who replaces James? Who replaces Durant? Something lesser. You understand? So already that makes it unbalanced. And with the fact that LeBron will select first, we always have that edge. Embiid, select Steph Curry. So he's always having the edge. So that's
the issue. You want to ask something? Yeah.
And just to add, to what you guys have said, during the picks, I mean, towards the end, they asked KD, Kevin Durant, that what would he have done during the picks, and he said that he wished that he had picked another big boy from the other team. He said it, and it goes to show his mindset already. And for me, when I look at the composition of the two teams, I just feel that. Durant and LeBron, exciting boys, but the king is side as the winners. He has
Olale, I have a question for you. Do you think LeBron's success as a GM in identifying talent has already paved the way for the next stage of LeBron's career when he finally stops playing professional basketball? Do you think his eye for assembling talent would open another career path as a potential GM on NBA team? What do you think?
Well, I think that is the next stage in his career, considering how Michael Jordan has probably failed as a GM. When it comes to the All-Star, you can feel LeBron's selection is always spot on.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if you look at the way the Cavs team and this presently Cavs team were constructed, all the teams had LeBron, and there is a LeBron hand in all the teams. And to be fair to him, the teams have they have their own fair share of success. At the same time, we've seen those teams having some bit of weaknesses, which probably made the Cavs seem to be like the Cavs think that when you return to after 2 years, it just looked like, wow, there's nowhere that team was going to again. And you could see the same thing with the Lakers. Probably after the first 2 years, it couldn't, this year, at least with him bringing in Russell Westbrook, but generally, you feel LeBron is the kind of a person that, you know, he has that feel for identifying talent, and I think it's my probably one.
And I was actually,
I know LeBron will certainly own a team. It might be as minority this team, I'm sure that's one thing likely.
Yeah. And just like how you wanted to say something.
Just to add to what Wally just said, I was highly impressed with the way LeBron was explaining his picks. Once he picks a player, even before he picks that player, he will tell you his CV, a summary of his CV, and his major reason for picking him. Mm-hmm. That means that player's most technically strong skill. Let me put it like that. Mm-hmm. And it goes to show that he knows what he wants. That's that's a person. He has a personality whereby he easily understands what it is to form a team and the assets he needs in each player
to get the team. Okay. Kashi, wanted to ask something before
I wanted to say that I guess what will make him different as a GM would be his appetite not to win now. Because most of what has happened now with his current team selection or team selection influence is the innate desire to win now. That's why after 2 years, things may fall apart. But as a GM now, he may be constructing a team to win in the longer term, which will mean stopping or plugging some of those loopholes we've seen in current team influences.
I think I agree with that. But Kachi, I'm going to come to you now. LeBron has come out to say he wants to play with Bronny. The kid just celebrated his 17-year birthday, and he said that's his dream, and he's going to do it as long as wherever the guy is or wherever he gets drafted to, if he's drafted in the long run, if he doesn't have to go and play any role point, the G League or whatever, you know, or the elite league, you know, how visible do you think is going to happen that he's drafted into the NBA? That's number one thing. Because even if he's going to be drafted, he's not going to be drafted until 2024. If he's going to be drafted until 2024, which gives LeBron himself, like, we don't know what shape he's going to be in another 2 years, right? How visible do you think it's going to be?
Oh, very, very, very visible. I think that has been the single motivating factor for LeBron James for a long time. He's never hidden the fact that he would ultimately like to play with his son. And even though 3 years, 4 years from now, LeBron will not be a starter, but instead will be a sixth or seventh man, a la Ray Allen with the Miami Heat at the latter end of his career, or even Michael Jordan with the Wizards. I think, having watched a couple of Bronny James's high school games, and the fact that he alone has made ESPN cover, give high school basketball prime time slots on the ESPN, that tells me that he's a draftable, maybe not a first, not if even if he doesn't go first, second, third.
First pick.
He'll probably be a first rounder, I think. At the very worst, a second rounder. But I think he will get to the NBA. The only other thing now is, how does he want to transition from high school to the NBA straight? I don't think it's that transcendent a talent to do that. So he probably will play 1 year of college and then become eligible for the draft in 2024, like you said. I think LeBron, with all the money he has spent to stay fit, is doing all that so that even if it's only 1 year, he plays together. And LeBron said it is at that point, it will not be about the money.
Exactly.
That he will probably go for a veteran's minimum, $2 million, and just do what hasn't been done before. I think it's feasible. I think it will be done.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. Just to put a little bit of salt to it, as it stands right now, Bronny could be eligible like the 32nd draft if he makes the draft. But as it stands right now, that's his ranking for the draft in the NBA.
Moving away, exactly.
And he's still a kid right now. Definitely, it's going to improve. That ranking might change or will change in the long run. Olayinka, I'm going to come to you and Shay right now. Bell Brook wanted to kill Ali Khan. I don't understand why Khan is still fighting. I know he's still a young guy. I'm probably older than
35.
I'm older than 35. But I don't know why it's not about being 35. It's in the last couple of years we've seen a constant constant, my God, I don't know.
Humiliation.
Exactly. Thank you. Constant humiliation for this guy. And it's so dogmatic. He just wants to fight. And is this about the money? Oh, because now he's saying he wants to retire after another elimination. I'm going to start with you before I go to Shane.
Devo. Amar Khan is a boxer that when he first started out, he was seen as the next best thing after sliced bread. he was seen as the next British fighter to rule the world. And yes, he started well, defeating people. He had the flair. He had the Muhammad Ali-like flair. But I think along the line, he began to deceive. Don't let me use the word deceive. He actually couldn't control some of his antics in the ring. And that led to his first defeat. And it was a long time ago. And, down the years, we have seen a gradual slide of his pedigree. It could be attributed to age one and the fact that the first loss he had actually shook him. And, his rivalry with Kell Brooks, they're both British, by the way, it dates back to like 17 years.
Oh, wow.
And, they were meant to fight in their teens, let me put it like that. And however, the fight didn't come out then because I think the desire was for the British boxers to rule the world first. Then they can now come back home and settle scores. He's past his prime. In his 40 fights, I believe he's lost like six. And while Kell Brooks, his opponent, I think he's done like 43 fights, just three losses. And when you look at the fact that Amar Khan ran through four weight divisions from lightweight to lightweight.
Shay, you want to take over from Alanga?
Yes, Debo. Now, talking about Amar Khan, I think he's past his prime. Maybe in the last 5 years, it has always been there for us to see. This particular fight, I think it's just a fight of a grudge. They wanted to settle the grudge, and I think it's also the build up to the fight was really serious, being that the rivalry has always been for over a decade, and everything was just up there, for the fans to enjoy. Talking about Amar Khan has not had a proper fight since 2019 July.
Wow.
And for someone that has actually over his peak, and for him to come into a battle 3 years.
Wow.
After, yes, 2019. We know COVID happened in 2020. We understand that. But some people actually fought after the lockdown during the ending of 2020.
Yeah.
Like Kell Brook that we're talking about fought Crawford in his last fight. This guy has been active. In fact, Olayinka was talking about his three losses. Guess those people that he lost to. Crawford, Spence Jr., and GGG.
The best.
These are first class, pound for pound,
boxers.
Top five fighters. Wow. So we know that this guy is already shredded and is ready to humiliate Amar Khan. Before the fight, guess what? Amar Khan had to force him to come into a particular weight that he was not prepared for.
Wow.
Also, before the bout, Amar Khan forced him to change his gloves. He actually changed the gloves on the ring for that particular fight. So he played all the mind games against Kell Brook. But when you are not good enough, it doesn't matter whether they change the gloves or they drop weight or the ring.
And when he decided to fight after
the guy just
of not being active.
Yes, the guy just took him apart. If you look at the two fighters, you see the difference. Even by looking at them, you see that
American's
weight is not even enough for him to move the way he used to move. Laika was saying something about Muhammad Ali. Yes, when American came to the stage, you can see the skill, you can see you know, the movement. You can see the kind of power punches he brings to the table. Everything is over right now. He's talking about retirement. I think he should be talking, he should have started talking about that like 3 years ago.
Wow. All right. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. See, I don't know if Kachi wants to add something or we just go to the Winter Olympics.
Well, what else can I add except the fact that Nyakang just keeps embarrassing us? I knew when he started, he was started as the biggest thing to ever come out from British boxing.
After that Olympic win, right?
But scandals outside the ring, marital issues, sometimes I believe has also played a part in his focus. You asked what he was still fighting for. I said he's fighting to secure his pension. He didn't get a member of British, an MBE from the Queen. He didn't get an OBE from the Queen. So his pension is not guaranteed. The young man just needed to secure the bag because his wife will leave him and sue for everything. But it was pretty embarrassing to watch. He wasn't even taken down. When you watch the fight, he wasn't lifting his hands anymore. To even put up a fight in the sixth round. The referee The referee took pity on him and stopped the fight. Otherwise, we may be talking about something much worse than this. So I expect him to retire. Kel has said he doesn't think he wants to fight again. He just wanted to fight in your camp. He has done that.
Just show him. I'm the boss. Of course, the Winter Olympics. It's done, dusted. Sunday was the grand finale, or what should I say, the closing ceremony. Norway ran away on the medals table with 37 medals. Republic of China with 32 medals. Germany with 27. All Canada with 26. And of course, the USA with 25, which is a great one. We'll go on a short break right now. When we'll come back, we'll be jumping straight into the world of football, where Kachi and Olawale were head-to-head last week. Let's see who won. Don't get anywhere, guys. Jack Wilshere finally has found a new home after a very long time training with Arsenal. I don't know why Arsenal did not sign Jack Wilshere on a six-month contract. I don't know. I think he's still better than Eleni. Molali, I'm going to start with you. Should Arsenal have given Jack Wilshere this 6 months contract? And how happy are you for Jack Wilshere securing at least? The club is signed for in Denmark at seventh on the league, which is not bad. 6 months with a possibility of an extension after the initial 6 months. How happy are we for Jack Wilshere?
As a fellow human being, you have to be very happy. I think I'll take you back to probably those days when we were in primary school. There is this book we read there, Report to Find a Home. So Jack Wilshere finally found his own home in Denmark. But again, I think, fine, on a more serious note, good for him, happy for him. I think the problem with British players at times is they're a bit reluctant to go outside England, which I think sometimes limits their options and opportunity. I'm sure if he has probably been open to clubs outside England then, because I think he probably set a standard for himself looking at, okay, probably I won't play below anything below West Ham, that kind of level. So I think I'm happy for him, but the part of us are not signing him. Probably a bit of wise decision. We might not, I'm sure Arteta saw him in training.
Sonny Abacha. Why took him to Dubai?
So he must have, of course, he must have probably looked at it and said he probably doesn't want to, tamper with the balance or the kind of rhythm that his team has presently. Mm. Everybody knows his position. We know who's going to come in for this one. Probably doesn't want to put himself in a position whereby he would be under pressure to play in.
To play.
When probably he might not be that ready to play or this. Play. So it could just be a wise and smart decision just to avoid that. And for the young man to, we all just hope he could probably make something out of this opportunity in Denmark.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Kachi, I'm going to come to you. Comment came out again. Piers Morgan said Odell Beckham actually played injured in the Super Bowl last weekend. And Piers Morgan came out on Twitter to say, finally, a Beckham that knows how to play football just won, in reference to David Beckham. I know it's a huge slight. I just want your comment on. I want your I want to pick your brain on that.
Truth is, when we give when we respond to such a jibe by Piers, we're giving him the clout he's chasing. I think Piers Morgan is just bitter because of the number of games he lost from across coming in from David Beckham. Because he's a bitter Arsenal fan. You cannot take away what Beckham has done. During our production call, we mentioned a key moment that probably defines David Beckham's career. Mm-hmm. And that was the last second free kick he scored against Greece, to hand England a ticket to Tokyo, Japan. Korea, Japan World Cup in 2002. At that point, even the biggest stars we've seen Messi lose a shorter distance penalty. That was just him and a free kick, him and a goalkeeper. But David Beckham did it time and again. There's one other game I always remember when I think of David Beckham, and this was in the height of his squabble with the former coach, Sir Alex Ferguson, where he came in as a substitute in the Champions League against Real Madrid
yeah.
in Old Trafford,
where
he came in and he almost brought Man U back into the game, if not for the brilliance of a certain Ronaldo de Lima. And I can say this many, many times. The squabble he had with Fabio Capello towards the twilight of his career in Real Madrid. He wasn't played for the first 3-4 months of the season, but he continued to work hard, changed even Capello's his way mind. Of playing, and changed the coach's mind. They won the league on the last day of the season. Yeah. He moved to the MLS. He knew he still needed to stay fit and not use his reputation to make the World Cup team. He took a loan and a pay cut to come to AC Milan. Played well, so well that he could finish his career in PSG.
All this tells you
that was a result of hard work. And if you are still going to jibe a man who has put in so much, and can become the face of the next World Cup we are having in Qatar, anything Piers Morgan, who we know to be a clout chaser, and who we know that once everybody says this is the way, he
goes the other way.
I don't want to pay him any mind. I don't think we should as sports
as well. Okay. So on this show, by the power vested on me by Oracle Kachi, I'm going to rename Piers Morgan. I don't care. I'm going to rename Piers Morgan as Piers Donkey Morgan.
You have the power. You have every right to do so.
All right.
I don't want to say what is really in my.
Well,
mind,
I think one more thing. Probably David Beckham probably has turned down an interview with Morgan.
When you see
Morgan doing all those kind of things. The reason why Piers Morgan is all over Ronaldo is because Ronaldo probably offered him that interview and
exclusive
that's true.
He made some big money. So
yeah,
we know where he's coming from. We can just ignore him and move on.
All right, perfect. But of course, for kids watching the show, we just need to remind them who David Beckham was, how we played, what he did for the game. You know, this is a guy that can score from the middle of the pitch. He started that. Actually, as a matter of fact, it was the first person that I saw do it before people start replicating it later. Don't blame me. I started watching the Premier League in the early 90s. And of course, to the Champions League review. So Olawale and Kachi, they both fumbled the Salzburg-Bayern Munich game. They said, both of them said Liverpool is going to beat Milan. Of course, we know where Kati stands with that, so I'm not surprised. they both said City was going to wallop Sporting Lisbon, which actually did happen, and they both agreed that PSG would defeat Real Madrid, so they were tied. So going into the game proper now, let's start with the first one. I'm going to come to you, Shay. City away to Sporting Lisbon. We all knew City will win. We expected City to win, but 5-0 away from home. Shay,
Debo, I think Sporting Lisbon came to the party with the wrong tactics. You can't be playing Man City and you want to probably beat them for what they know how to do best. Few teams can do that in the world at the moment. You must, probably the likes of Liverpool, because they understand the way City plays. But Sporting Lisbon trying to play toe-to-toe with Man City, there can only be one result.
Suicide
can only be one result. And I think that's what happened. For every time you see Man City attack, it was almost a goal. To the point that even the ones that entered that they thought was offside was actually onside. So they totally lost
the plot.
The plot, the way they were supposed to play against Man City. Right now it is 5-0. I don't think there's a need for a second leg.
But,
good one for Pep. Is in a situation right now that it needs to rest some players because the league is going.
No,
I know you're going to get to that.
We'll wait for Pep. Once he gets to the next stage now, he will take her again and lose. Don't worry. She beats Pep now. I'm not surprised anymore. Kashi, I want to come to you now. PSG versus Real Madrid. Madrid was so negative on the day. Lionel Messi losing a penalty. Courtois being the man of the match. And what was Eder Militao and Luis Vasquez thinking for that goal? That killing Mbappe.
Or
are we going to just put it down to Mbappe's brilliance as against the flaw of Militao and Luis Vasquez?
I think you'll probably have to make it 70-30 because it takes good presence of mind for a player to say, I'm not going to go in front of either of you. I'm going to go through both of you. And it was really because Luis Vasquez is not a natural defender. So there's obviously no way he would have thought of making a tackle outside the box. Because if it was really a proper defender, right back or a Pepe who was there, they would take one for the team. It was in the dying embers of the match. But take all credit to PSG, who really wanted to win that game, even though we know the away goal doesn't count, and which makes me question the tactics Ancelotti put out on the day. But you also have to understand that Benzema was just coming back from an injury, so he really didn't have a strong attacking threat. Over the weekend, before the game, he did a cameo for Gareth Bale playing as a nine. It was a woeful performance by all standards. So he knew that he had to be fully conservative. But it's not yet all over. Kudos to Mbappe for having that fortitude and presence of mind to make that attempt. We always thought it was going to be a very, very close game. But I should also remind myself that every time the media paints a particular match to be a close game, it always, most times, under-delivers. So, for the second leg, expect it to also be this close, except this time around, Madrid will be chasing it. But if they chase it too much, PSG has enough in their arsenal to get goals and settle the game. But yes, PSG deserve to win on the night, even though Messi lost the penalty. It begins to make me question, is Messi really a clutch penalty taker? Or should they have just given that to Mbappe to take?
To take, all right. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. Olaika, I'm going to come to you. Still on PSG anyways. Moses Simon destroyed them over the weekend as well. 3-1. Neymar, this time around, losing a penalty. And Marco Verratti crying all over the pitch. What exactly is happening with PSG sometimes in the league? And My question is, Poch is being touted as the next coach for United. With this kind of attitude or this kind of results that we're seeing, is indecision, quote and unquote, is it going to be a right fit for the Red Devils?
Yeah, Debo, first of all, that Neymar's penalty was a terrible penalty.
Yeah. They said it's the worst of the century.
I'm telling you. I guess he is one of the few players that likes touching when taking penalties, but just went wrong for him over the weekend. Now, going proper into Poch, I mean, first of all, you have to give kudos to Pochettino for the ability to manage the privilege and the ability to manage such a star-studded team. I mean, if I was in his position, I'd probably be telling the players to choose who's going to play. But no, on a more serious note, it's a good learning point for him. He's beginning to me, he's trying hard to please the management. And interestingly, I guess he's succeeding right now. Despite their loss over the weekend, I see the team, they're coming together. He's beginning that is Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar. No doubt about it. When Messi signed for PSG, people assumed that was going to be the focus of the team. But right now, I see Mbappe and Neymar. I see them being the key members of the team, and Messi just, you know, for me, like the last of the last trial. So yeah. I have to give it to him. I have to give it to Poch. So coming over to back to the Premiership to United, is that the Premiership experience before? And if he comes over right now, he has learned a lot. He learned when he was at Spurs. He has learned a lot at PSG, working with stars and a stable management. Chances are that he's likely to succeed, provided he's given time to, you know, create a team, bring in players that can actually the focal point of his team. And I'm sure that once he comes back, CR7 might not be part of that team. CR7 is a very, very, he has a strong personality.
So all right.
Park might succeed, yeah.
All right, perfect. Sheyi, I'm going to come to you. Now, Mbappe is considering to sign a contract extension with PSG. I know I said it some time ago, and we're like, oh no, it's probably going to go to Real Madrid. It's postulated, or should I say, it's been touted that it will earn more than £1 million every week, basic salary. Do you think Mbappe should leave PSG, leave the money at PSG, and chase the fame at Real Madrid? Because Real Madrid won't give him that kind of money.
I'll say like two things. Number one, I don't know how realistic that is for PSG to hold on to Mbappe and pay him that kind of money. I don't know what financial fair play is going to say about that. They already have Messi on a very high wage bill. Also the likes of Neymar, of course, on high bills. So I don't know if Mbappe's new contract will still make them have that, you know, that possibility of riding on a positive side of financial decisions.
Yeah.
Of course, we know that they got quite a lot of players for free. So maybe that calculation might be making
actually
sense
work for them. Exactly.
That's number one. Then number two, I think PSG, by having Messi in that team, also sets them up to be part of the teams that can actually give Mbappe the Ballon d'Or. But the question is, Mbappe, is he going to be second to Messi, Neymar always? Or he wants to go to a Real Madrid actually building a team for the future, and he will definitely be the star. Benzema is 34, 35 thereabouts. He can't be there forever. And I don't think Benzema will actually be in the forefront when Mbappe comes into that team. I don't see any other major star in Real Madrid. Real Madrid will always, in fact, I'm sure part of the plan, part of the project that they've sold to Mbappe is that he will be the main star. And for every, Ballon d'Or, FIFA best, he will always be the person to carry the flag.
Yeah,
which personally for me, that's a country.
Exactly.
I just don't want to say that on
the show. But
won't say the other one.
The other one. So I think that's a perfect a deal for Mbappe. Take it or leave it. That's a club with culture. That's a club with massive history. For me, if he goes to Real Madrid on a free, he still gets other bonuses also because they are not paying anything for him. Uh-huh. And also for what he tends to gain career-wise. I think Real Madrid is not
a better option.
Only a blind man or a deaf man that doesn't listen to football will actually tell him to sign a contract extension for PSG. For PSG. Me, this is the time for him.
That means I'm blind and deaf.
Actually, I didn't know that's kind of your opinion, but to be sincere.
Kachi, I'm going to come to you. Do you agree totally with Shehi?
But I've always said this, Debo, that I think Mbappe would leave. You cannot compare the prestige that Real Madrid has. Shehi hit all the right nails on the head. The team is young, ready to be led by another young stalwart. And it looks like something, I just started thinking about it when Shehi mentioned it. When you get the captain's armband in Real Madrid, it's basically them telling you, you only have 2 more years to leave. you know, it's like a precursor to you leaving the team. From Raul to Guti, from Guti to Sergio Ramos to now
Karim.
Karim Benzema. It is, that team is ready for a breath of fresh air, especially because they'll be offloading the huge salary demands of Gareth Bale at the end of this season, which is probably one way they need to make space to accommodate Mbappe's potential fee. And for some of these players, sometimes they are even from what he has earned in PSG, he's settled for generations on them. So at that point, prestige and reputation now count. You know, the only anomaly we've seen in the Ballon d'Or and FIFA best was Ronaldo winning it from England. Otherwise, and Lewandowski bucking the trend.
What about Midget winning it from France?
Who Midget. Won it from France?
Midget.
No. That one, the PR team from Barcelona and PSG did a yeoman's job. And I just think L'Equipe did not want to give it to Ronaldo. It shouldn't have been either Ronaldo or Messi.
Or Messi.
It should have been Lewandowski. So you need a showcase. Like, literally, you can say Nantes versus PSG, how many people globally watch the game? Even with Messi there, even with Neymar there. But the worst team playing against Real Madrid will be seen by tens of millions of viewers. Not to now talk of playing in the Clásico, competing every year for the Champions League and competing every year. So that is too much of an allure for Mbappe to say, look, I want to be speaking Parlez-vous and be comfortable where I am. I think this is the end of his time in PSG, especially because the project has not yielded the results they wanted.
Results.
Pochettino would probably leave at the end of this season. Why not let it become the reunion of Neymar and Messi and go forge your own story in Madrid? It's done.
All right, perfect. Especially if, but because now she has put so much pressure on me that I can't even hear my own opinion.
I chose not to say anything about you being blind or deaf.
Otherwise, can retract that so that we can.
Otherwise, they will turn my name to Adeja and Adebo and Adedonkey. But of course, I'm still going to say it. I strongly feel Kieran is still young. We could take the money for a year or two with a gentle agreement to move to Real Madrid.
Or like what?
Yeah,
to move agreement.
So that will release him. Okay. He should.
Gentleman agreement. Everybody should learn from.
Exactly.
From
Harry Kane. Gentleman agreement.
All right. Perfect. Moving straight to England right now. We'll start with the Newcastle West Ham game. Olali. West Ham are chasing Champions League sports with the brouhaha of Kodzuma and all being pulling their attention to all directions and all, being in murky waters. They managed a 1-1 draw against Newcastle. What's your opinion about this particular match? Especially for Newcastle battling relegation. Looks like they are going to be safe now. And West Ham battling.
I think for West Ham, it's a bit of a setback for their aspiration to probably make the top four. It's not looking good. For Newcastle, I think they are on the right direction. They had a setback when they lost their new signing, Trippier, to injury. But one thing about them of recent is they have become a bit difficult to play against. They are not conceding too many chances, open chances to opponents. So this makes it like four games without a loss, three wins, one draw, against West Ham away from home. It's actually a valuable result. But again, other results have not really helped them this weekend. Watford, Watford getting that victory away to Aston Villa was actually massive. Burnley, recording those 3-0 win. I think the only positive result for them this weekend is Leeds United losing to to Manchester United. So, but all things being equal, they are on the right path. Let's see how they can sustain this momentum. And considering the fact that Bruno Guimarães, we've not even seen much of him since he signed from
Olympic.
So, yeah, we hope to see him in any time soon and see how he could probably impact
the team.
Their fixture is not really that good, but let's see how this whole thing, because whatever it is, the world for the Burnley of this world probably will not win more than two games before the end of the season.
Yeah. But I just to do a quick recap, they've actually drawn teams like Brentford, Crystal Palace, Leeds United, Everton into the relegation battle. Because right now, Crystal Palace are on the 13th position with just 26 points. And they've played one match more than Newcastle. Brentford are on the 14th position. I played two games more than Newcastle and they are just on 24 points. So as far as I'm concerned,
right on that.
I think they've drawn those teams.
Brentford probably need to look at their show. They have to look, watch them themselves very well. I think Everton too. Everton, because of their inconsistency, they are not far off from that relegation zone.
I agree with you.
They've dragged a lot of teams. Like it's not more of like, it's not four teams battling for relegation. It's like seven teams,
exactly.
Who could potentially go down.
Exactly.
Probably Norwich, Watford, a bit secured. Let me see, other five teams battling for that remaining one spot.
Norwich has a minus 38 goal difference. My word.
Unbelievable.
My word. Minus 38.
And Leeds United problem is that they considered 50 goals this
50 goals this season.
This season, only Norwich City that considered 53. And Norwich City have played more games more than Leeds. And Leeds are heading to Anfield on Wednesday, considering the result at
Olale, you're a crook. Is that why you now triple capped Salah?
Yes, it's a very strategic.
All right, perfect. I want to come to you now, Kachi. Arsenal versus Brentford looks a good game for Arsenal. They had like 2-3 penalty shots that were not given to them. But in the long run, they managed to win comfortably, if I can put it at that, quote unquote, 2-1 against Brentford. How big of a deal is this for Arsenal, considering they look to be potential candidate for the top four this season?
When you consider, and I'm sure you will ask online cast a few questions later, but when you consider the fact that Tottenham did the unthinkable by beating City, that victory over Brentford becomes even more important. It was a game that Arsenal dominated. I think at a point they had, it was 79-21% in terms of ball possession.
Wow.
And even the XG, which is the expected goals variance had Arsenal at about 3.1 to Brentford's 0.89, which meant, wow. I mean, Arsenal was, they expected Arsenal to score. I also thought it was necessary for the confidence of Emile Smith Rowe to come in after the red card Martinelli got the last round and getting among the goals. Arsenal has shown, whether you want to accept the fact that getting rid of Aubameyang for that young team was necessary for their confidence. I'm not saying whether it was the right thing to do when you look at it in isolation, but looking at that young team and how Arteta needed to have them focused around a single goal and not have any distraction. Seeing that the results have not suffered even after such a drastic move says something right about that dressing room. It was also necessary for Arsenal to exercise the demon, the opening day demon of losing 0-2 to Brentford, and showing that they could belong. I mean, this is the first year in a long time that Arsenal is kind of like getting the points from games they should win.
They should win.
And competing well enough, even in games we expect them to lose. So I thought it was a good win, but it became an even better win considering that Tottenham
was posted
and Man United won and are hot on their tails.
All right, perfect. Olali, are you going to ask me that question that you asked at the start of the show? Olali is gone. Okay, so with Olali gone, I'm going to ask the question. I'm going to answer you myself. I want to become prime Jada Sonia Abacha of Emirates right now. So I'm going to ask myself that question and I'm going to answer it as well. So Olali said there would be a lot of diciness, or should I say, tinkering by Mikel Arteta. Now that's, and I'm going to come to your line for what I'm about to say anyways. For him, now that Martinelli would be back for the next game and Emile Smith Rowe is showing what he knows how to do best, or the guy that settled in so well, Saka definitely is undroppable. So what should he do? And for me, the answer is quite simple. Move Martinelli to the middle, drop Lacazette, and play Emile Smith Rowe to the left. Olayinka, do you agree with me?
As we all know, there's this popular saying that you don't change a winning team. You understand? So I think, first of all, you need to consider the fact that you are forming a balanced team. I'm looking from the perspective of the coach right now. He has a balanced team, honestly. The team is full of confidence. The team is strong in all the departments of the game.
I don't know why you people overhype Arsenal. You people are just biased into analysis. I don't understand why. Where do I meet you guys again? Overhyping this Arsenal, like this Arsenal team. I'm sorry. I'm a donkey.
Except for the top striker role, and I don't think Lacazette has been doing a great job.
He has been doing a woeful job.
Well, in that case, but when you look at the fact that he's an experienced man, he's probably the
captain, the team captain as well.
He's the captain right now. He's one of the senior members of the team. So you might not want to drop him at the moment. So if Martinelli were to come back, I think obviously he'll probably start from the bench, and see what comes out of the team that won the last match. So I will expect him to start the same team that won the last match. Then as time goes on, we'll probably bring in Martinelli and remove Lacazette. But you have to give it to that team. They've grown in leaps and bounds in the last couple of months. Yeah, it's unbelievable 100%. That right now they are sixth. However, they are sixth, same point as the fourth place West Ham.
Fifth.
Meanwhile, they have two outstanding matches. Things being equal, if they decide to win those two matches,
they have three matches right now. Three outstanding matches. Ola, so to you, what would you rather do now that Martinelli could be put is coming back for the next game against Wolves. And Wolves, we know they're on the crazy horizon now. They are moving up. Realistically,
so in my team, I have Smith Rowe in my FPL team, so I'll start Smith Rowe. I want more FPL points. But on the most serious note, it's actually it's a situation most coaches let me say this kind of situation you want to be at the same time you don't want to be. I think looking at Martinelli's type of player, if he can overcome this his constant injury issues, which I think actually derailed his progress early on. Yeah, I think it looks more like an aggressive player, somebody in the mood of them Van Persie, just like the way we saw Greenwood. He could start his career probably on the left of the attack, but it looks like a player that has more of the future as a center forward. His eye for goal is very aggressive. So I think I expect him to end up in that position sometime in the future. And for Lacazette, I think he has lost some bit of his aggression. His overall play is not bad, but in terms of his desire to get the goals, he's not that really there.
It's really appalling.
Yeah, I just think Arteta might just be waiting for the right time, probably a suspension on injury. And probably just slotting Martinelli in that position. Okay. Then from there, if the team continues to thrive, leave it like that.
Okay. I don't want to flog Arsenal issue too much, but actually, I want to come to you. Sometimes I don't understand what they are doing at the Emirates. Lacazette did not renew his contract, so he's definitely leaving. Eddie Nketiah, the second striker, is definitely leaving. And I'm wondering, what's the future plan? Or is it just about now? They're not thinking about, money.
Aziz Balogun, there's an Aziz Balogun from India.
I know, Folari Balogun.
Folari,
you just know what seems to compete against you. I understand. you're in the Bucky Waters with Arsenal. So you want Arsenal to be as ambitionless as Manchester United.
But you said it now. They didn't renew Lacazette contract. In KTA has this. So what else? They are relying on Folari coming up and becoming a star.
Wow. Okay, Kachi, what's happening? What are they thinking? I don't understand. I don't even know the question to ask you, but what are they thinking?
I don't even know how to answer you, my brother. And I don't know why you do want me to tell you what is wrong with your dear club. I think this is par for the course since Arteta came in. We've not seen any marquee signing. It looks like they probably are relying on whatever they are seeing among their youths right now. I know that in the youth league, Arsenal is competing well. I think they are fourth in their youth league or third, I can't remember. I'm not saying that's the right way to go because I still feel Chelsea's youth team is still the best in England, second followed by Man City. But this is par for the course. I mean, Arsenal, since Mikel Arteta came in, has been a selling club. And I really don't know why and how to understand it because the owner Stan Kroenke, like we mentioned last week, recently built a $6 billion stadium.
He's just a wicked man.
He's not a football fan.
As soon as I said that, that was what came to my head that he's not a passionate football fan.
Exactly.
He's just that.
But it looks like Josh doesn't understand.
Apart from that, does he understand the simple rule of football? Does he understand offside?
So it's sad what's happening in us now. But there's reason for you to go well. If it's not broken, why stop? They've been able to compete even with a dilapidated team. Maybe that's why nobody's looking their way. And let's not forget that Arsenal right now, whether you want to admit it or not, is not a club players are looking to join. So it's very difficult to sign marquee players.
100%.
And maybe the only way to go about it is to go from your youth team. Maybe. Just maybe.
Wow. So Folari Balogun is what Arsenal is talking to. Anyways, going to the next match, Villa shocked at home by Watford. Sheyi, I'm going to come to you. Looks like the wand that Gerard brought from Scotland is broken. Sheyi's done with us. Olale. I don't. Okay, Sheyi's.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. But not really. But I think Aston Villa still has a little bit of problem with their consistency. They are still these areas. He has looked at key areas of the field. He has looked at the key areas of the pitch and made some key signings for himself. I still think it's going to take time for him to be able to really pull together maybe like 5 wins on a row, and we can start saying, okay, Steven G is doing what he did over there at Rangers. So that wasn't a total surprise
for us. Yeah.
For me, I know they will have some little bit of leap. So far it's not that bad. So okay. I think, yes, a little bit of blip. So is expected at this moment. So I wouldn't say, even though it was a Watford team, but also if you look at that Watford team, on a good day, Watford can really disturb anybody. I think Watford has really shown even some of the top teams already.
Yeah, Liverpool. This is
like
United.
Like Liverpool.
But United is not a big team, though. United is just. All right,
Can I chip in, please?
Yeah, sure.
Right now, we are at the business end of the league. And the worst teams to play right now are teams battling struggles for their survival. That is where you will know what they mean by a relegation 6-pointer. They are fighting tooth and nail. I'm not saying they'll win every game, but when you beat them, and you saw how, and I'm sure you will ask your line, that is, you saw how resolute Norwich City was before the dam was finally broken.
Yeah,
that is what you should expect from teams going down. They will not go down without a fight.
Without a fight, of course. And of course, Burnley surprisingly defeated Brighton and Hove 3-0 away from home. That's a shock win. And West is coming to prime. I don't know why I did not buy him. One goal, one assist for him. Chelsea struggled to defeat Palace 1-0, Akazek finally coming up with a goal for them. And my question still remains, Olale, and I'm going to come to you for this. Lukaku had just 7 touches. One was from the kickoff, just 7 touches. And people keep saying, you know, I'm an ardent supporter of, I'm not a fan of Lukaku, but I'm an ardent supporter of Lukaku. I don't think he's a bad footballer. He might have bad football control and the rest. These tactics that TT is using looks to be a kind of limitation for the attacking guys. Even Kai Havertz and Akanziek that flanked Lukaku, Kai Havertz had just 23 touches the whole game. Akanziek had just 38 touches the whole game, while Lukaku had 7. The worst of any footballer since they started the Optal statistics in 2004.
Yeah, it was actually, I think, 7 touches or 9 touches in all, 3 7. Inside the 3 inside the opponent's box. I don't know. I didn't watch the game, but if your striker is not having enough touches, I don't think it's an indictment on the striker. I think it's more of an indictment about the whole setup of the team and how the team, where they are channeling the ball to. Like, in as much as even the setup is not good, I've always had my reservation about those attacking players of
that flank,
and even this, and again, even the CM too, even I the central midfield position, they lack a bit of creativity there. As much as industrials, those guys are the likes of Kante, Kovacic, and
Jorginho.
But most of, they are not kind of players who you expect to pick up some kind of passes and create chances for forward players. So if the guys who flanking are not smart enough, I think this is what you get. You could understand why that interview he granted. So even though that thing shouldn't have happened, you could understand the frustration because if the team is not playing
to his strength,
friends or around the center forward, I don't know how you expect
expect him to succeed.
Yes.
All right, and he was born for £98 million. That's what everybody will keep talking about. like I want to come to you. The title has been blown wide open. Liverpool winning 3-1 against Norwich. I think we have like 6 minutes left. 3-1 against Norwich. The surprising one, Spurs defeating City 3-2. Harry Kane should be starting for Manchester City on that day. But of course, he still has Spurs, thanks to Daniel Levy. What are we expecting now? Liverpool won a standing game. If they can win, they will reduce the point to, I think, 3 points. If I'm not mistaken, they will repeat. I'm pretty sure they will beat Arsenal anyways. So they should reduce the point potentially to 3 points. What are we expecting?
It's gonna be a fight to the very end. I mean, I think Liverpool's confidence level is high, especially with the purchase of Luis Diaz. That's a player that has brought a lot to the team already. Uh-huh. And his contribution is already being felt. And you know, we have a great coach in Jurgen Klopp, who knows how to push players to the limit. Now, I want to believe that it will be tough for Liverpool to lose any match before the end of the season. I'm not saying they might not drop points from draws, but the chances are that they will not lose any match. The last one against Norwich was based on the fact that they changed some players that played the last match. Going into the match against Norwich, they probably changed the whole team. And during that match, I was on another forum. I was telling my friends that Oxlade, Keita, and Henderson combination should never play again. And I was actually appealing to Klopp. And before you know it, he took out two of them, brought in Thiago and Origi, and the rest was history. Thiago changed the face of that match. And Thiago is going to be a critical player for Liverpool going to the end of the season. So I'm going to see a situation where Liverpool might just win it 2 weeks to the end because they are not going to drop any match. They have a solid forward. The back is compact. The midfield, they're doing very well.
Odu's Baba is just so confident about Liverpool.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to a diehard Liverpool fan.
Thank you very much.
They are going to make it. They are going to win the title. They'll probably win two trophies this season. The Premiership and maybe the Carling Cup.
The Carabao Cup.
Okay. We shall see.
Kachi, what are your chances for City?
I wanted to say it was just a minor blip, but it didn't look like it. Antonio Conte seems to have Pep Guardiola's number. For some reason, I can't explain. the commentators were salivating. Even when Riyad Mahrez scored that equalizer, it felt like Spurs were robbed instead of City getting a draw. So when that goal from Harry Kane came, it looked like poetic justice. However, I don't think the race is over. I still tip City as a slight favorite to win it. Let's see. It will come down to the next game between Liverpool and Manchester City on April 9th. Then we will know. But I'll give a slight edge to City. Pay more attention to what Olai guys said. That is a Liverpool fan.
All right, perfect. And of course, in the Spanish Segunda, Osasuna lost at home to Atletico Madrid. You are Felix coming back with the first goal, and that was a beauty from Luis Suarez, of course. And of course, Granada lost at home thanks to Danjuma hat-trick to Villarreal. And Real Madrid defeated Alaves 3-0. Benzema scoring the last goal from the penalty spot. And in the Serie A, AC Milan due to with the bottom table. But thanks to a loss by Inter Milan to Sassuolo, they are not far off. They're leading 2 points right now. So even if Inter Milan wins the outstanding, it's just going to be 1 point difference. Roma played a 2-2 draw against Verona. Kachi, don't go anywhere. I'm coming to you. 2-2 with Jose Mourinho getting a card. Kachi, what are we looking at for the table? The table shows a possibility for Milan right now. What are the chances of Milan winning it? And I know last week you said Inter having a little bit of blip. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, they're having a mid-season slump. But the table is also not lying. I still think it's Inter's league to lose. In fact, I'm a little bit concerned. I wish Inter was playing another team and not Liverpool, because I wanted their concentration from the league. Them falling out of the Champions League contention when they lose the second leg by 3 more goals to Liverpool.
A mid-season funk they have. But let's hope and pray. Well, this is me hoping, because AC Milan has been very inconsistent. They are not beating the teams they should beat. And that is costing them a lot of points. But if they finish second for the second straight season, it will not be a bad thing. But I think right now, those guys have received enough experience to compete. And let's see how it goes. But I'm not going to come here and tell you, like Olainka said, I'm not going to come here and tell you we are winning the league, but we will compete.